So how does all this GPS system thing work? Graham Collins is from Effective Solutions. They're a global positioning consultancy in Romsey. He's a man who can explain it better than most, perhaps. Graham, good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick.
So we were talking out there to Atsu, and he's got the system in his car, his particular system, and he just puts in Fisherton Street, and off he takes Alan Jones to get there. And he was saying it's all to do with satellites or something. So where are all these satellites, then?
Right, well, they're all in orbit. There's 24 of them.
24, yeah.
They're in several different orbital planes, so at any one time, when you look upwards, you can see about 8 of them anywhere on the surface of the Earth. You don't know where you are, but the satellites know where they are.
Right.
And each satellite is broadcasting its position in its orbit, along with some very accurate timing information, and the receiver that you've got in your car or boat or whatever receives this this information and can calculate by comparing time of arrival of the different timing information where it is relative to the satellites, and that's how it works out its position. The maths is a bit horrendous, but you don't have to worry about that. It, you just press the button and it does the rest.
It does it all for you.
Yes.
Right, okay, I think I've got that. So, who launches these satellites, then? They sound like expensive bits of kit.
Well, that was the courtesy of the American Department of Defense, and they put them up about 10 years ago, actually. Been going for as long as that.
Mm.
And gradually, as the receivers got cheaper and more sort of domestic users started using the system, as opposed to the military, they were pressurized to make the system more accurate. They originally used to interfere with the accuracy of the data, so that to, as they put it euphemistically, to deny this accuracy to potential hostile users.
Oh, right.
Now, it turned out that most of the users were American citizens, and they poked the government in the eye and said, look, turn this selective availability off and give us accurate positions. So eventually Clinton announced last May that this was going to happen, and it happened literally in May 2000.
Yeah, well, sort of overnight, so everybody then...
And suddenly it got very accurate.
Yeah. When you say very accurate, how accurate?
Around about 15 metres on a good day.
15 metres?
Yes, whereas it used to be anything up to 100 metres or more.
Yeah.
When they used to interfere with it.
Right. Now, I've got one on the boat, and 15 metres is fine for me, because I can see things 15 metres away. In fact, I could see things 100 metres away, and I knew whether I was there or not there. And 100 metres seemed to me to make little difference one way or the other, except you could go aground quite easily. I could see that. But there's Alan in a car now, and within 15 metres, he's, as we were hearing from Atsu there, this thing will say, we're coming up to a junction, time to turn left, time to turn right. How does it know that there's a road there?
Right, well, it's got built into the software, into the computer that's in this onboard navigation system on the car, a complete map of the UK with all the roads and crossroads, junctions, and a lot of other information as well. That's how it does it. It works out where it is from the satellites and plots that on its internal map. It also displays it on a screen.
Mm.
And it's got some clever software that has got a route that's been put in. And as you come to a junction, it tells you to turn.
Turn left, right, or wherever.
Speech synthesis, you know, it's been around for quite a while.
That's
so
amazing.
It's just bringing together a lot of different technology.
So the satellite knows where it is, and therefore knows where you are, if you've got one of their receiving things. The satellite, of course, doesn't have a map of from here to from Southampton to Salisbury, but you've got one of those in the car.
Yes.
It works like that, then.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
So all it's doing is taking the mystery out of where you are.
It is.
And it's just reading a map for you.
That's because, the problem is that if I set mine that's on the boat to say, let me take it from my berth at Shamrock Quay, so please take me to Cowes, it'll take me straight across Western Shore, it'll take me through Hamble, and it won't know that there's land there. It just says, this is the way to go, this is the heading to go on.
Right. The road map-based navigation systems actually use a routing system which only allows you to go along the road.
So the road. It won't let you go across fields.
That's right. It plans a route. It's a series of straight lines approximating to bends in the road, but it will keep you on the road.
Right.
As opposed to, sending you across a field.
It'll send my boat across the field and it won't go very well.
Well, that's right.
It tends to take me sort of onto banks that I'm not supposed to go onto. But then you need to know a little bit about the map of the sea, and the maps of the sea are very different from maps of the land.
Well, that's right. And boats go a lot slower than cars.
They do,
it gives you time to think.
Yeah, it gives you a bit of time to think, doesn't it? So, Where next, though? Because the other thing that it doesn't know, and Alan did point that out when he set off, the other thing it doesn't know, of course, it doesn't know about traffic and roadworks and problems, you know. And the road to Salisbury is something of a problem. There's always traffic on the road to Salisbury.
Right. It certainly doesn't know about that. And there are other systems. There's one by a company called Traffic Master, which...
Yeah.
A lot of people are familiar with, which is a little map, a very simplified map of the motorways and main roads of the country. And there's transducers in the roads.
Yeah.
And as the cars pass over them, they pick up information about the traffic density and traffic jams and
yeah.
so on, and display that on this screen.
Right.
So that can help you if you've got one of those as well. But it's not combined, as far as I know,
no.
with any GPS routing system.
So maybe that's coming soon, then. About,
could be,
right.
yes.
Yeah.
Could be.
And, of course, this map, you'd need to, if they build new roads, if they allow this, that and the other, or they close certain roads off, because, of course, they'll make one-way streets or they'll pedestrianise areas, you've got to keep the map up to date, presumably.
Well, that's right. Now, in fact, Garmin have a number of these mapping systems as well for England. Car GPSs,
yeah.
Garmin being the company we deal with, mm-hmm. and they publish their map data on a CD-ROM, and they bring in a new CD-ROM out every 6 months to reflect
new bits and pieces,
new bits of road and closed roads and all
oh,
that.
Yeah. CD-ROMs are going to be the thing of the future. Then.
Well, it's yes, big business for the map-making companies. Yeah.
Now you run Effective Solutions, then a global positioning consultancy. You've just told us everything we need to know, Graham. We don't need you anymore, do we? What exactly do you do?
Well, I talk to all sorts of strange people about other applications. When we finished here, I'm off to Southampton Container Terminals Limited
yeah.
down the road, where they're planning to put GPS on all their straddle carriers, so they can find out where all their straddle carriers are. They've
yeah.
got 80 of them, mm. and it's a big site. And also, more importantly, where they put containers down and pick them up from. Because if they lose a container and it's containing, for example, a load of parts going to a car manufacturer and a just-in-time manufacturing system,
mm.
They can get sued for delaying the delivery.
Oh,
so
right.
they can lose a lot of money if they can't very accurately pick up a container and get it on its way to where it's supposed to go.
Right. So you'll be able to find their lost containers?
Well, they will be able to find their lost containers, hopefully. But they're doing a trial at the moment with a couple of systems, and ours is one of them. And... that's the sort of application we've got.
Yeah.
Royal Society for the Protection of Birds, they bought a lot of our systems for finding out where exactly where the rare breeds nesting sites were and things
yeah.
like that.
So all of those huge things that we used to see, big collars and things around birds to track them and stuff, they're getting smaller and smaller and smaller now. Because I always used to worry about things, you know, say, here's the elephant and we're going to put a collar around it. And then you end up with this huge thing around its neck, you know, but now they're getting smaller and smaller, tracking with GPS.
Well, I don't know anyone tracking birds with GPS, but we've certainly supplied some systems to MAF.
Yeah.
For tracking sheep, would you believe?
Right.
And that was a few years ago when GPS was a bit bigger, and they actually had to get a saddle maker to make some special holders that these sheep wore.
Yes, really.
And they used to gallop around the fields with GPS on their back.
Right. Fine. It's all going well at the moment then, Graham, no problem. But you said it's been over 10 years or so, and the Mir space station is about to crash, they tell me, into the Pacific. These satellites are up there going, now satellites cost billions to send up, millions of pounds to send up. How long will they last?
Well, they have a few spares up there.
Do they?
Yes, and they do gradually replace them. They'll if one's got a fault, they'll switch it off and... turn one of the spares on, so it's a repairable system.
Is it?
And there's a lot of redundancy in it. As you know from your boat, you only need 3 or 4 satellites to get a fix.
Find the fix, yeah.
You can normally see 8, and there's 24 of them up there, so, you know, it's quite a lot of redundancy built in.
Because, I mean, it's come to the stage now, I suppose, where with all of the different applications, ones that you've spoken about and all the people that have bought the receivers, we can't do without it anymore. It's going to come to that stage.
Well, that's right, and it's becoming a fashion accessory. This is a... an example.
A little handheld one.
This is one I gave to that's my daughter's, actually.
Yeah.
I gave it to her last year because she went trekking in South America.
Yeah.
And a Christmas present the year before last, I gave her that so she wouldn't get herself lost in the rainforest.
Mm. And she didn't.
And she didn't, no.
Oh, great. It's a tiny little thing as well, the size of a mobile phone. It's a wonderful thing.